Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at the Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at the Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please. And find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio. Starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
Pop Life Podcast today is the 9th? No.
The 9th?
Hold on. It's the 12th.
No. It's the 11th. It's the 11th.
Okay. Well, I was close. Right? It was better.
You know, I mean, if you could have named a few more numbers somewhere in there, you would have hit it eventually, I guess.
Happy Easter.
Almost. Yes, by the time this comes out. Happy Resurrection. Happy Holy Week.
And Good Friday and Passover. And is there another Jewish holiday in here?
No, Passover in itself is a whole festival.
Seder thing or something like that. That's
Seder is a dinner
that's part of Passover.
No, I gotta go get my suit out of the cleaners and get my tap put on my shoes.
Yeah, man. You know what I'm saying? Make sure you good. Make sure you have a little something in your pocket for the plate when it come by. Don't be trying to get no change.
Exactly.
You only got his 50s.
Only come
and make sure you go to service early.
Oh yeah. PC, you going to sunrise? You going to sunrise service now?
Hell no. Well, I don't know. I might go to 8 o'clock service, which is different than sunrise service, because you know. That's regular 11 o'clock service be crazy on Easter.
Yeah.
Especially in Harlem. You got the tourists. You got the...
Oh, yeah. But that 11 o'clock's like a concert.
Yeah.
You can never... The rule of thumb is to never go to a service that doesn't have one that follows it.
Exactly. Cause because you're being here.
Yeah.
Because the 11 o'clock is the service where we're going to have like... The Living Word Ministry, the Dance Ministry.
Oh, you're going to have praise dances?
Yeah, child.
Sister Jones going to be in her unicorn, doing her butterfly wings.
You're going to have all the special presentations. And our pastor, this past Sunday at Palm Sunday, was talking about come on Sunday, bring somebody. I'm going to be like, ain't no room to bring nobody. Don't be telling people to bring somebody.
Yeah, so anyway, peace to everybody that is going to church on Sunday. I don't know if I'll be making it, but you know. Peace to everybody that does go to the Holy Word. I probably will watch it on a pewter though.
Whose service do you watch? Abyssinian?
No, I watch the guy in Atlanta. What's his name? I told you about him. Edwin. Edwin. What the boy name?
From House Eldridge of, or something?
Nah,
I know who you're talking about. He's an Omega.
House of Hope. From House of Hope.
Yeah, he's an Omega.
Yeah, he's a Q, exactly.
Was it that Philip something or something?
No, it's Edwin something. Jesus. Okay. How am I blanking on this guy's name? That is terrible.
And it's Edwin Phillips. I know who you're talking about.
He's pretty famous down there. I usually watch him because he gives a good service. You know, it's long though. It's long. He takes his time now. There's a lot of singing in the front. It's a lot of choirs and, you know, but he does good work, you know.
Listen, you got to usher in the spirit.
Exactly. I can't believe I am blanking out on his name. That's really bothering me because I feel like I'm disrespectful right now. I told him I'm going to watch this man's church and I can't remember his name. But it'll come to me. How's your week going so far?
Aside from allergies kicking my ass, I'm good.
Oh, yes. I don't have that. E. Dewey Smith. That's his name. That was going to really bother me. Pastor E. Dewey Smith. But yeah, I don't have allergies, so fortunately I'm okay. You got allergies, bro?
Nah, I mean, when it's really like super bad, it'll bother me a little bit. But, I'm not like one of those people where my eyes are puffed up and I can't really function and I can't really move. I'm not that guy.
Yeah.
And I didn't have them until maybe 5 years ago.
They can come in any time, right?
Also, it's all this global warming. Like, I know a few people who never really suffered from seasonal allergies until the past several years. But for me, it's not the eyes and everything. It's really bad sinus pressure and head congestion.
Because y'all don't be eating y'all greens the way y'all supposed to be eating y'all greens.
Right.
This nigga is the cure for everything is greens.
Well, it is true. He's not that far off. They actually do say that if you eat, it's not the same as greens, but if you eat local honey, it's supposed to help you.
Yeah,
something
like,
about
I
the
think
pollen.
Bee pollen. Yeah, and like natural pollen. I know that it gets pretty bad in my house, and we'll go buy a jar of that from like Whole Foods.
Mm-hmm.
And they take that in, and then they're pretty good. But you know, I also just buy some Allegra and some Claritin,
and you keep it moving.
Yeah,
yeah. So
yeah, I'll be wanting drugs.
So I got my Galton flared up on me again. And it's been.
I still can't believe you actually have the gout in 2017. Like, it's amazing.
You know what? I went to the doctor on Monday, and asked nurse Charlene. I asked about it, and she said it's actually it's way more common than you realize. She said it actually is usually with younger people, because younger people have a worse diet, because you can get it from eating overdosing on red meat, or overdoing on shellfish, overdoing it on beer specifically. I guess maybe because of the yeast in the beer. And there's a few other things as well, but like, you know, young people go out, they drink beer a lot, they eat burgers, they eat lobster and all this stuff. And so like that, she said it happens like way more than commonplace than.
So basically the rule is moderation.
Moderation on everything. Yeah. And that's what happened to me this time. I was having this, turkey. They have this like Moroccan turkey that at the Whole Foods. I'm trying to be bougie, and so I had that like maybe three times within a 10-day stretch, and the turkey just, I guess, you know, I looked on the list after it started, and turkey is on the list of foods to avoid. So but this one's to me is lasting longer than the last time, because it still hurts, you know. So I'm taking medicine for it. So y'all pray for me, because
we gonna get some
Nike slides anyway.
Nah, you get just some blessed herbs from Sister Jones.
I'm gonna do that.
So he can rub it on his foot.
We gonna pray over your foot.
Yeah, because Jeff, you can't be wearing the fly shit when you got the gout shoes, bro.
Yeah, I'm wearing Nike slides. I ain't got no options. This is crazy.
You ever see them gout shoes with them Velcro straps?
The big boot shoe.
Bro, don't put that on me, man. Don't do that, man. Don't even.
Don't be so mad, especially
put
like
that
the,
on our universe,
the,
bro.
The weather's warm. Ooh, yeah. He'd be so mad.
I'd be like, they got the Japanese ones, you know. Nah, don't do that, man. So. Y'all pray for me, get over this gout, man, because I can't be walking around with Nike slides limping like old man. This is whack.
Yeah.
First thing I wanted to mention is I guess we could first off start by mentioning I want to mention the Get Down to start off. So the Get Down is a series on Netflix for those who don't know, and they had a season two came up. I guess maybe about a week ago.
It's called Part Two.
It's
called Part Two. It's really just one season, but this was the second part of season one.
Okay. Cool. Okay. I didn't realize that.
Yes. It's not, if you look at, cause it was weird to me that it was only six episodes initially, but they broke.
So this
the
is basically
season.
Now a full season.
Yes. It's now a full season. It's full 11 episodes.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. So, you know, I watched part two of season one, whatever, you know, and, I know Sean, you watched it too. And you know, disappointed is the right word, but it definitely didn't seem to have the flair. They used a lot of tricks to kind of, to seem to justify cutting, they cut back the budget some. So they used tricks by adding animation to kind of cover spots where either they didn't want to film, or also you could tell that Jaden wasn't around as much this time as he was the first time. His character wasn't around as much, like obviously because he must have been busy doing other things. So they used the kind of tricks to kind of cover up some stuff. It was cool. It was cool. I mean, if they come with a part two, I'm going to watch it.
Did you like the first part? Because I heard, I still haven't watched it, but I heard very mixed reviews.
Well, I did like the first part, but I'm going to tell you what happened, and I bet a lot of those people who have mixed reviews did the same thing. The first episode, especially, of the first part is a very hard watch, because I think I mentioned this before, that was directed by Baz Luhrmann, because you know, he did this whole, he produced the whole series, he directed that first episode. And for those who know, Baz Luhrmann is a director, writer, producer as well, movie producer. He's done The Great Gatsby. He did Romeo and Juliet. He did, I think, Chicago. So he does, he's kind of like very, like, kind of fantastic, over the top kind of productions.
And it's also very non-linear. Like, there might be flashbacks and fantasy, exactly, and all that kind of stuff.
And that's how the first episode was. It was like a lot of jumping around and, like, I mean, literally guys are like jumping around in the air, like doing karate moves, and like, it wasn't really kind of making sense. And I think that turned a lot of people off. But he only did the first one. And then the first season was 6 episodes. So the next 5, it kind of settled down into more of a linear story. But a lot of people checked out after that first one.
In my opinion, it was choppy from beginning to end, right? So you didn't really quite know, even in those first 6 episodes, like you said, there were scenes where they were jumping around and it was kind of cartoonish, right? But then they had these other scenes that were really sort of dramatic and very real. And so you couldn't really get a beat on what you were watching.
Yeah.
You know, like it's like when you go to a comedy show, you're expecting to laugh. So even if a guy isn't really that funny, right? Like
you kind of queued up to laugh. Yeah.
And you're queued up to laugh. So this was the thing. Like, you didn't know what to expect. Was this a drama or some sort of quirky drama? Was this a cartoonish kind of thing?
Yeah, that's what I was kind of hearing. Like, people didn't know whether it was supposed to be tongue in cheek, whether it was like, or,
I mean, I didn't think that it was supposed to be tongue in cheek from the initial description of this. The initial description of this, it was supposed to be like, you know, really about the evolution of not just hip hop, but just sort of young people during that time in New York City, mm-hmm, and what that meant. And so it's like, in some instances they capture it, and in some instances it's just like super extra and cartoonish. You know what I mean? It's not very, you didn't know what to make of it.
Yeah, yeah. And also on this season, it seemed like there was definitely still elements of, you know, the old kind of beginnings of hip hop, and like, you know, and like, remember, like, the beginnings of hip hop. So this is set like in the mid to late 70s.
No,
they're not even in the 80s.
Yeah, it's 77 and then 78. You go from 77 to 78 in this season.
Yeah. But in this second part of season one, they seem to abandon that in spots. And like, some of it was like, well, that's really not 1977. Like, this is really like one of the main characters sings this, you know, supposedly this big song. And it sounds like a Britney Spears record. It's like, this production is like 2007. Like, this is not anywhere near, like, in 77, it was disco. Like, everybody was doing disco records.
Flat out.
Flat out, yeah. So like, if you do anything but that, or funk, you know? So if you wasn't doing anything but that, like, it was crazy. So like, they had that, and even some of the kind of like rap movements and stuff, some of the stuff they were doing was definitely like more like later in the 80s than, you know, so they kind of like, well, lost the path a little bit.
I mean, just to be very specific, because I'm a stickler for this stuff, as well as I know you are, Jeff, especially for like the sounds and sonically, that was the first thing that popped out to you. But the first thing that popped out to me was that, you know, groups didn't jump around like that when they were rapping in 1978 or 77. Like, these guys had harmonies. They were actually more in line with a vocal group to some degree.
Yeah.
And what was really interesting is that, you know, they never really showed these guys rehearsing. They never really showed.
Yeah. For all the really, stuff they were doing, I was like, when did they rehearse all this shit?
Yeah, yo, and I'm saying to myself, like, you know, there's no community center that, you know, the old janitor lets them in to rehearse. They don't really, they're not really a part of the creative process. The one thing I will say is I really did like the fact that one of the characters, Ra-Ra, who was in the group, also sort of becomes the manager to some degree, because I think a lot of what's missing in hip hop is that story, and how a lot of the executives that we come to know started out as artists and hype men and didn't and weren't really able to cut it.
Yeah,
so they started want to. Yes.
Yeah.
Or just they didn't want to. Yeah.
Yeah. So they started becoming the guys who set up the shows and da da da.
Yes, they became booking agents. They became managers. They became you know, the guy at the label, A&R, or a liaison, I guess.
That's Russell's story. That's Andre's story. That's a lot of people's story. Yeah,
that's a lot of people's story. So I was really, it was really good to see that. I was a little disappointed, I could say, because I feel like Nelson George usually hits it out of the park when it pertains to the history of Black music from like 75 to 95. Like, that's your, he's your go-to guy for that. And I feel like, I don't know what his level of involvement was, but I definitely feel like they sort of dropped the ball musically. And also the story continued to be a bit choppy and very extreme. You know, not a lot of nuance. You jumped from one thing to the next. But, you know, God bless him. $120 million dollars.
Yeah, so I don't know. That was about to say. So I don't know. You know, part two is definitely up in the air because this is a really expensive production, and you know, I don't know if they're going to get the money to do this again. So we'll see. You know?
I feel like I haven't heard as many people talk about it this time.
I don't think a lot of people were very interested in it. I felt like even when I looked in my queue, like it wasn't really prominently placed.
Yeah,
it just didn't have the feel. It didn't have the buzz. I felt like they really, I don't know if production was an issue in terms of why they split it up into two seasons. I mean, into two parts. I think, you know, I would think that you would just sort of film your season and then release it.
Right.
It seems to me like they filmed those first six parts. They were behind schedule, needed to launch, put it out, and then, you know, had to sort of regroup for the for the second part. But
they promoted it so heavily when it first came that I was really surprised how quiet this was.
Yeah, me too. So, I mean, and I want to also say, because this is, I had the gout, I was in the house a lot, so I was watching a lot of Netflix and whatnot. So I also watched Chewing Gum, season two of Chewing Gum, which is a British comedy starring a woman named Michaela, oh Jesus, what's her last name? I feel like it's Cohen, but I'm not sure. Is it Michaela Cohen? She's like the writer, producer, director of the series. She's basically kind of I don't want to call it like a British Issa Rae. That's kind of like
a counterpart.
She does this, you know, it's her show. She developed it. She, you know, she cast it. She, you know, she, like I said, she writes it. She produces it. Michaela Cole, her name is. I wasn't far off. She does everything. And it's really, you know, it's really good. I mean, there's six episodes. It's very short. They're only 23 minutes a piece. So you can really breeze through it. It's a very kind of quirky, their character is very quirky. I talked to, Christiana, Mbakwe about the series when it first came on. You know, cause it's basically, she's from London, the character in the cast from London. And Christiana said, like, there's a section in London where the girls are actually kind of like that. And they kind of act like that. Cause I was asking her, so they're really girl, like, she's kind of goofy. And she was like, yeah, now there's kind of like there's a kind of girl who lives in this area who kind of acts and dresses in that kind of way. Like, so she's really kind of nailing it. But it's good. It's really good. It's entertaining. And she'll like kind of slip in touching on topics as well. So like for anybody who hasn't watched it, like if you got it, like a Saturday or Sunday afternoon, you ain't doing much, you should definitely check it out. I think you'll enjoy it. And then the last thing I wanted to talk about was, The Tunnel, which is a famous nightclub, was a famous nightclub in New York City, until I guess like the 2000s is when it closed, bro.
I guess the late 2000s?
Yeah, very early 2000s.
Yeah, like 2000, 2001, something.
But
like
none of the cool people were there by that point.
Yeah, it had gone.
Everybody had checked out maybe 98, 99.
Most folks
had moved on.
Exactly. It was owned by this guy named Peter Gation, Canadian guy who ended up getting deported from the country for like drugs. And this guy named Choke No Joke, who's done a few things. He worked at Rockefeller. He's done some other things. He's a cameraman. He worked at BT as well. And he has like tons and tons of footage of the Tunnel, because he literally would film there. It was every Sunday night was when the Tunnel was. And he was there. He would film there like every Sunday night. So he has a ton of performances, just the crowd. He just has a gang of performances. So
also just, I guess, for people who aren't from New York and never lived in New York, the Tunnel is probably most infamous for creating Funk Master Flex, basically. Like, yeah. he's famous because he was the Tunnel DJ.
Exactly. And if, for those, yeah. if you want to see a little bit of what the Tunnel was like, it's at the beginning of Belly, Nas and DMX and whatever, they go to the Tunnel. They go to
that's
that club.
The Tunnel, yeah.
Yeah, the part when they're wearing, they have the color, like the eyes are like the color, the colored and stuff. That's them walking into the Tunnel. And that's literally what the Tunnel was like. Like, they nailed it. Like, they really nailed it. I don't even think the Tunnel was open by the time they filmed that movie, but Hype Williams obviously had.
Yeah, Belly was like 97, 98. Yeah.
Wasn't that long ago?
No, it was open. It was open.
Oh, yeah. Shit. Okay, yeah. Well, then
Belly was the 90s. Belly wasn't even in 2000. That was the 90s.
Oh, shit. Okay. Well, then Hype probably just went there on a Sunday night and set up the camera.
Probably.
Because it's like, it's really what it was. So, anyway, so it's a really interesting documentary. He basically, his focal cast is pretty much all the security people. Because there's legendary stories about the security and stuff that was going on inside and outside the club. So he interviews all of them along with a few, you know, club goers or whatever, and DJ Cap and a couple of other kind of opening. DJ Flex decided not to participate in this because he wasn't getting a piece of it. And Choke was like, yo, why am I going to give you a piece of something that I did by myself? So,
right.
So Flex, according to Choke, Flex also stopped a lot of people from interviewing and things. So that's why there's no artists and stuff. But it's still really well done, though. I mean,
it makes
that's so much hate.
Well, that's listen. In fairness, that is right in line with everything
with
he's done.
Fluxes,
it's right in line.
Well, also he's co-opted. Not to make this a whole Flex rant, but Flex has co-opted the Tunnel brand at this point, as though he owned that shit.
Yeah, and he started it, but in reality, the party initially was started by Jessica Rosenblum and Chris Lighten.
Shout out to Jess.
Yeah, the first 2 years was their party. Jessica, I guess she had a falling allegation and she left the Tunnel, and then Flex took it over and had it until it closed. But
I don't know if Jess was in the doc, but Jess has some crazy
talk. No, she wasn't in the doc. She wasn't in the doc either. There's not even footage. He even put footage of her in the doc because she probably wouldn't have signed off. There's one shot of Chris at the end of it.
I worked at the Tunnel, I think that was 95.
Oh, so you was in the prime time.
Yeah, I worked security. Yeah, man.
How was that? You was young then, though, huh? You was like 18, 19?
I was a little young wolf up in there.
I was close to 20 doing shit that 20-year-olds do when they think they Superman.
I can see Sean up in there looking like Bowling and Lou. With a damn medium black security T-shirt on.
I always had a big shirt on.
I'm a Brooklyn too, nigga. What the fuck you saying?
I would wear vests. I always had vests on
because you knew.
Listen,
and Sean, you were bigger when you were younger too, right?
I was pretty big. I mean, I could handle myself, but it was.
So you was looking like a security nigga, basically.
Yeah, I saw some stuff in there that that was kind of like amazing. I actually just one quick story. There was a dude who worked in there who I think we later found out was like a fucking Serbian prison guard at one time.
Really?
And like,
so he's really out that life.
He was a skinny, unassuming man, and this was like way before MMA shit. And he put a dude in a chokehold so fast, like, and it wasn't like a traditional chokehold where you're behind the guy, right? It was like some weird ass full Nelson. He had his arms wrapped, and it was like the chokehold, every time the guy moved, he hurt himself more.
Yeah
It was the most amazing shit I'd ever seen in my life. Like, it was like, it blew my, like, I'm still talking about this is 27 years ago.
right
Like, it was crazy. But you know, a lot of those guys still do security. And shout out to Glenn Beck. I don't know if he's in the documentary.
Yeah, the white guy, right?
Yeah,
Glenn, he's in there. He's in there.
Glenn has done security on every New York party.
Yeah.
Of Glenn, note.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially every New York hip hop party.
Yeah, he's official.
And he's done all of it.
Yeah, he's absolutely official. And you know, shout out to him for, you know, hiring me.
Yeah. You know, I guess I told Sean you should watch it because I'm sure you know most of security guys. But like I said, it's really well done. It's up. Choke got it. It's on iTunes. Like, nice. So it's real. Like, it's really popular.
And just to add, on Friday nights, that same crowd would be at the Palladium.
Oh.
Before the Palladium was an NYU dorm.
Yes, before the Palladium was an NYU dorm, you know, the whole, the Biggie party, all of that, like that was the spot too.
I remember those.
So it was that same sort of, that same energy and that same crowd. You would go there on Fridays.
With no separate VIP areas. That's None what people really need to understand. Like,
they talk about all of that in the documentary, how like the VIP area was like when you bought bottles, you basically had to like carve out space at the bar. Cause it was,
that's it.
It was VIP, which I remember very clearly. Like I said, it's really well done. You know what I mean? I think if, you know, it's an enjoyable doc. It's, you know, it goes by fast. It's funny. It's entertaining. Like, I think people should check it out. It was really well done. I don't even know Choke, but I was proud of him anyway. I was like, oh, okay, you got this off, you know? So peace to him. We should mention, old Janet Jackson.
Now, see, we don't really know.
I'm just saying what the people, what the folks are saying.
But we don't, but let's just put it out there that we don't know. For real, we know there's a split. We don't know the details. Yeah, we know there's a split, but we don't. That's all we really know.
Yeah, we know she's getting a divorce from her husband of 5 years, even though they only let people know 3 years ago that they were married. So they were secretly married for 2 years,
which is right in line with her MO,
which is what she likes to do.
Exactly, which is how she gets down. She did the same thing with Renee.
And we didn't know about Renee until they got divorced.
Yeah, we knew they were boyfriend and girlfriend, but we didn't know that they were like officially married, you know. She just had a child 3 months ago. It's some kind of way, I guess we could move on past, you know, whether she carried that baby or had a surrogate or whatever, but you know, the baby's here, and that's all that matters, you know. The child's 3 months old. Is the child a boy or a girl? I don't even know.
No, I don't think anybody knows.
Yeah, I don't think anybody really knows. She said that, they said that the rumors are, according to like entertainment television, is like, you know, she barely even left the house, that he had it set up for her. They lived in London and she barely left the house. She had, you know, drivers. She had obviously housekeeper, persons, and nannies and anything else you could need. So she barely would even come outside. She just came outside maybe like to go to a kid's store to pick up some clothes or something like that. And that was it.
That might be the problem.
Yeah. She might be just going kind of stir crazy.
And, you know, listen, you know, to be fair, you know, just publicly, I don't know Janet, but like, she's not an old, you know, like that's, she's not an old woman, right? Like so even when you saw the concerts change, right, when her wardrobe changed and sort of the content of her concert started to change, I was like, this seems a little weird. And I think maybe she just wanted to get away, and it, you know, she probably, you know, loved this guy and they were able to, you know, have this great life. But also, like, she's black, you know, she's a black woman with black brothers and black nieces and nephews, and she probably wants to like go get some greens. Like,
this nigga with the greens. This nigga with the greens.
It's always the greens. Always the greens is the metaphor, but the greens really is the sustenance of all things core for real black.
When you leave home, you know what I'm saying? I'm just saying she wants some red punch and she wants a pound cake. You know what I'm saying? I mean, she ain't getting that over there in the UK. God bless everybody over there, but they ain't got no red punch and no pound cake. Not from Sister Jones.
This nigga's crazy. I thought it was interesting. So they have a picture of her in the online today, the first time she's been out since they announced a divorce. And she's wearing this a baseball hat with Bobby Taylor across the front. And Bobby Taylor is the guy that discovered the Jackson 5. So I thought, Bobby Taylor in the Vancouver, it was like an old group back in the early 60s. So I thought it was kind of interesting she was doing that. But I'm also wondering, is she going to stay as Muslim? Because she converted to Islam when she got married. And I'm wondering
She might. I mean, I don't think that's, you know, I'm not completely well-versed in the specific sects that are in Islam. But, I mean, they're Muslim people who are practicing, who, you know, Muslim women who still live very full Western lives, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't necessarily know for sure, but I mean, it's not out of the question. She doesn't have to, you know, stop being a Muslim in order to, you know, come back here and right. live or whatever.
So and also, she has a son, right? They have a son.
I'm not sure actually.
You know, there may also be some conversations about how he wants his child raised in the faith, you know?
I'm sure there's conversations about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, God bless.
Because what, the Jacksons are what, Seventh-day Adventist or something?
Jehovah's Witnesses.
Either way, I don't know. Let me shut up.
Yeah, so, you know, we'll see. I mean, she's. I mean, I guess I shouldn't say that. I'm going to keep it moving. I'm getting better.
But I just know, I got to say one thing, though. Like, for people who are talking like this was some gold digger,
some scam
moment, some scam.
Like Janet like, made a come up. Like, come on, y'all.
Like, let me tell y'all something, my nigga. Like,
it's Janet Jackson.
You know, somebody said this in baseball, and they were talking about A-Rod, but it was like, when you have $250 million, your lifestyle does not increase drastically with $500 million.
It actually becomes a more of a nuisance,
right?
Like, because you got more money to manage,
and it's what I'm saying is, like, you have help, you have all of that,
all
shit
the
that
help
she got over
you have
there.
All of it, yeah.
She's got all of those trappings, none of those,
and that
trappings
she's had for a
lost.
Long time.
Oh, yeah. Not a long time, all of her life.
Yeah, and also it's not like Janet was out here flailing trying to make a comeback. She's Janet Jackson, like, she's fine. Yeah.
She's good.
She's been fine. She's good.
It was acting like she was on like, you know,
Hollywood divas trying to make
some reality
show.
You know,
like I said, I'm like, my nigga, like, trust me, like, if she never gets a dime from this guy, like, she's not gonna be looking for a roommate on Craigslist, my nigga.
She's really okay.
Exactly. Yeah, that was a trip. There was a lot of that online. Like, as soon as she got the years, she broke out. She hit a lick. I'm like, she's worth $200 million. I know which is a lot more, but like at $200 million, like Sean said, you live in wild, comfortable.
On top of that, man, that's usually people who have never been in serious, committed relationships. Yeah. I'm not talking about the timeless. I'm talking about the actual the seriousness of being in a committed relationship. Like, five years is not a short period of time.
It's not short, but also, like, to go through the process of converting to another religion, of moving out of the country, of doing or canceling a tour, like doing all of these things, like, you don't do that for a come up.
Yeah.
You don't.
It was online being ridiculous, man. You know?
Yeah.
By the way,
niggas are ridiculous.
And this niggas do. But since we talk about ridiculous, I want to just mention real quick, I saw this thing online today that I guess T.I. did an interview on the radio, I don't know what station, maybe V103, what, doesn't matter, this morning, and here's a quote. Now, let's rewind a little bit. T.I. and Tiny have been in the blogosphere a lot because of their pending, you know, marriage ending, maybe not, we don't know, it kind of goes back and forth with them all the time, and T.I. has been linked to Bernice Burgos, I believe they say her last name.
Also, I think it's important to note that the final season of their reality show starts Monday. Right. So it's also beneficial to everybody involved.
Yeah.
To keep this chatter going now for this final season.
Yeah. Monday coming is lit because you got Love and Hip Hop, Basketball Wives with Evelyn and them back.
It's like the Basketball Wives All-Stars or some shit.
Yeah, exactly. And then you got...
Which disappoints me, though, because everybody on this iteration of Basketball Wives is too old for this shit.
Yeah, everybody old.
It's Jackie, Tammy, and Evelyn. All too old. Y'all are senior fucking citizens. Like,
Jackie's like about 52.
Come on.
Jackie's a grandmother. Legitimately. Evelyn is in her, probably about 43 or so.
I think Evelyn's younger than me, but she's definitely...
She's 40.
She's around 40.
Oh, she passed 40. 40. No. She's 40, maybe 41. And then Tammy's probably about 45, 46. Maybe.
Yeah, somewhere in there.
Yeah, so it's like you said.
Y'all are all too old. And the fact that, like, and it's a desperate grab because y'all ain't even all from the same... franchise, right?
Why is Jackie? Jackie don't know Evelyn like that. So T.I., this is a quote, and I wanted to kind of get your thoughts on this. So T.I. said today, and this is here, and I quote, It seems to me marriage and what marriage means and what marriage does, it's just one of those things that's going to distract me and deter me. And that it, that could be selfish, but ultimately, I'm the patriarch of this family. And it's my responsibility to take us onward and upward. I just have a purpose, and I don't always have the time to do the thoughtful and considerate things that a husband should do. End quote. And what we think about this here?
I think that T.I. has been married for 7 years, and that quote doesn't make sense. They've been together as long as he's been a star. So nothing.
Together before he came up.
He was on like his second. Like he was on his way up. He was on like his second album, I think, when they became.
When they became serious. But T.I., from what I understand, T.I. was.
He was on Tiny for a long time.
But I don't think they became serious until
But at any rate,
I think it was before his first album. Like he was still in the street.
Yeah. No, they weren't together then. They weren't together for his first album. They might have been starting a date, but they weren't like a couple for real on his first album yet. Okay. And I remember that because his first album was on Arista. I was still at Arista.
Okay.
But they've been together for basically his entire career, and they've definitely been together as long as he's been a name and a friend and a brand. Mm-hmm. So for that reason alone, that quote don't fucking make no sense to me, because for the entire time you've been T.I. instead of just Tip, you've been with Tiny. So the fuck are you talking about?
And also the thing about T.I., he seems like one of them cats, like a lot of these niggas out here. So he's out here, you know, allegedly dating, you know, seeing Bernice Burgos and whoever else he might be seeing and whatever. But he seems like one of them niggas that as soon as Tiny start dating,
he gonna act up.
It's a problem. Remember that when she was
a whole problem.
She was linked to Floyd in some kind of way, and this nigga was losing his shit.
Yeah, it's gonna be a whole entire problem.
He one of them dudes definitely like, I can do whatever I want to do, but you better have, like Jock said last night to his baby mama, you better have this dude around my kids. Nigga, you won't even be around your kids. Like, what are you talking about? Like, right. This thing, like that one, you know, dude, that, what, I don't know if you saw the show last night, bro, he has twins by the girl. The one twin was scared of him.
She was like, you want to play with daddy? The girl was like,
She was like, basically like, who the fuck is this guy? I don't know this dude. Like, and the other daughter looked like literally shrugged her shoulders, like, I guess, I don't know. You know, like, so I'm like, and, you know, there's a lot of dudes out here with that. So, what you think about that quote, bro?
As a husband, I think it was.
He's her husband. He's not her boyfriend.
Yeah. To be transparent, I have to tread on this a little lightly. But as a husband, I think when you say something like that, that's just a little weird to me. Like the wording, the phrasing, I mean.
And he ain't no new, like if he was a new husband saying some shit like this, I would still think it was stupid, but I might almost understand it.
You've been married
for a long fucking time.
Yeah. I've been married for 12 years. Mona and I have been together for about 21 years now, almost about 21 years, something like that. Like, this is, you're building a life. Yeah. Like, you're building a life. Marriage is dissolved. Things happen. People change. They grow differently. The person you was at, you know, 24 may not be the person you are at 42, you know, and that's fine. But I just don't necessarily know that, you know, having a paragraph to simply say, I don't think I was being a good husband, because that's what it sounds like ultimately. Like it sounds to me when I read that he's saying I just wasn't being a very good husband. And you could say that. You don't have to give all of these, you know, caveats and reasonings and rationale to simply say, you know, it's time. You know, we've grown apart or we moved on. Or you can say nothing.
But see, that's the thing is, that's to me the weird thing about the comment. He's basically saying, I've grown out of this marriage, but I'm still going to be, but I'm not going nowhere, but I'm still the patriarch. So
he means
he's going to provide for the family.
Yes.
He's not going to, you know, be faithful to his house.
He's saying, I think what he's saying in that context is that, listen, I am still the head of this family. Everything that goes on in this family comes through me, mm-hmm. right? I still will be making a decision on where my kids go to college, or, you know, like, I'm not leaving my family necessarily, right? Like, I think that's what he's saying in that sense. And I think for a lot of Southern dudes, when they use the word patriarch, that it means like Nas said, like, I'm the provider, I'm the head of household, I'm still going to be the one that you guys have to come to and deal with and talk to. And I think that also is a responsibility that extends beyond his immediate family. Because remember, when you marry someone, you take the in-laws in too.
Yeah. Right?
So you take in the mamas, you take in the daddies, and, yeah, you know, auntie. Yeah. You know,
Raggedy-ass brother.
Yeah. Auntie May, you know, she's short. She couldn't make her, you know, a $400 mortgage.
Yes. Yeah, so
so you come through with that or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, whatever it is. Yeah.
I think that's what he was intimating in that sense. But I don't, I, like, for me, that sort of goes without saying. I don't see him as a bum dude. Like, I don't I don't see him as some nigga that's just never going to see his kids again.
No, hell no.
I don't see that at all. So that's what I mean by it's a little weird, because I don't necessarily know that he needed to quantify that with a statement, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. But
then about his other token. So today on, you know, kind of moving the story a little more forward. So also today on Twitter, on Instagram, rather, I saw online that, so Tiny and Bernice specifically have been kind of going back and forth a little bit on Instagram about, you know, Tiny basically like, you ain't nothing but a bum bitch, and da da da. Bernice is like, you know, whatever, you know, they're back and forth a little bit. So then Tiny post today, I can't remember verbatim, but basically something like, yeah, you know, the guy you was thinking you was dealing with was laid up with his wife last night. So I guess that's the end of y'all situation, because he was laid up with me. And, you know, Bernice basically was like, ma, like, you sound crazy. So I'm saying all that to say that, like, it sounds like no matter what Tip does, Tiny ain't never going nowhere.
No, she's not.
She's never going nowhere, and you know, and I, you know, she's not dating nobody. She's just gonna, like.
Well, and also potentially, I don't know that Tip is really going. Like the way they have a relationship to me.
But he gonna come home,
right? If they have a relationship, it seems to me. I mean, y'all have been together through jail time. Yeah. Tiny was ready to take charges for this nigga. Like, you know what I mean? Like it's. That's a ride or die relationship. They have an actual ride or die relationship. So I think they probably get in fist fight. There might be all kind of shit happening in the house. They might have a shootout, but they still, at the end of the day,
ain't nobody going nowhere.
And if somebody else tries to come against either one of them to the other one, they probably gonna be ready to throw hands.
Yeah,
you ain't gonna be able
to never say nothing out of pocket about either of them
to either of them.
Exactly.
Because Tiny's consistently going ham on people.
Yeah, because Tiny could be like, fuck that nigga. Somebody be like, yeah, fuck that nigga. She'd be like, hold up, what you saying? You know what I mean?
Like, you don't know him like that? Yeah.
Exactly.
So this is an interesting, you know, interesting dynamic that we've all seen before.
There's a shitload of those relationships.
Oh, yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
You know, your uncle Jim, your Aunt June. Yeah.
They never got married.
You might want to call it street love, hood love, ghetto love, whatever. That should just,
his name's they still might, on, his name's she still might, on the lease.
Yeah, she might have stabbed him. He went to the hospital, came home. You know what I mean? It just, we all know these people.
Yeah. So God bless them. I want to mention, the Khalif Browder doc only, it ended last week. So the last episode came on.
I still haven't watched it. I haven't been able to bring myself to watch it yet.
The last episode is like, brutal, man. Like, it's brutal. Like, it's horrible. It's just a horrible situation all around. You know, he kills himself. It's all stuff that goes on with the family. You know, the mom dies. Then they lose the house. It's just, it's horrendous. It's like horrendous. And this documentary has led to, like, lately in a paper, there's been tons of
anti-Rikers coverage.
Yeah, about people, about them closing Rikers down.
Well, and there's been several campaigns. Now, be clear, it's kind of chicken egg, but I think one of the reasons that the Khalif Browder doc came to be anyway is that there are several organizations out there right now that have been actively campaigning to close Rikers. So, you know, I think it's part of a larger initiative to bring attention to how dysfunctional Rikers is. and trying to shut it down. So yeah, now finally there's been a commitment to work towards closing it in the next 10 years.
Yeah, I mean, the problem I have with that is that they have consistently talked about Rikers, as though Rikers is not part and parcel of a system, right? Like, the issue here isn't Rikers. The issue is that this young man
is the system. That's
yes. Right. The issue is the system, and using Rikers as some sort of symbolic place that they need to close is complete bullshit. Because guess what? If you're still gonna arrest kids and put them in situations where they can't make bail and then hold them for 3 years with no trial, like, that's the issue here. Rikers, I'm not saying that Rikers shouldn't be closed or she said, I don't have enough knowledge about that. But what I do know is that the system that smothered the life out of this young man is still active.
There's Khalif Browder's in there right now.
Right, literally. So all of this shit talking that's going on right now, I guarantee you, if you combed the 10,000 inmates that are in there, somebody has been in there for 2 years for an alleged crime that they haven't been tried for. They just can't make bail or some other bullshit. Or they put these kids in these situations where they basically have to defend themselves. And then you hit them with a shitload of charges while they're in there.
Yep.
Because they're defending themselves. You don't have a choice. They have rampant corruption in their corrections department. No one has addressed that.
Yeah.
Like to me, it's like they're basically just putting lipstick on a pig, man.
Yeah.
They put lipstick on a pig. They're trying to tell us how, oh, this is so bad and this place is horrible. These places are operating. Now they want to just disperse them into smaller places.
I forget the woman's name. She worked with the mayor. She was on the Breakfast Club this week past. So I watched the interview on the video interview. And this was her reason, which was bananas. She said that Rikers is very difficult to get in and out of. It only has the one bridge in and out. It's still too much of a mess. So part of the reason that she says, I'm not co-signing. I'm just telling you what they're going to sell to us. Part of the reason that they want to put these jails in the different boroughs is so the jails are close to the borough courthouses. So we don't have to deal with all the money that we pay every month, every
just
year.
Just to transport
for
people?
Transportation. Yes.
Yeah, so that's insane.
I'm just telling you what she's saying. She's saying, so like, the Bronx courthouse, I believe, is not far off the concourse. So they build the jail somewhere near there. So they basically could either walk them over or be like a 5-minute ride for them to get to court instead of coming all the way from out in Queens across bridges to get to court. And she also said, again, I'm just telling you what she's trying to sell us. Mm-hmm. She just says also because that will help the inmates' loved ones be able to come see them because they'll be close to them in the borough as opposed to having to travel way the hell out.
That's all bullshit.
Telling you what you're saying.
Listen, let me say this. Logistics is a concern, right? Like that's valid to me. It still does not address the fact that you are holding prisoners who are not, actually, they're not prisoners. You're holding people who have not been tried and convicted in a jail.
Yeah.
Haven't been processed. No one is addressing this. This is the blatant shit. Like, this is what I'm saying, man. It's like sleight of hand. They're doing all of this shit over here.
Shit.
Yeah. It's like, yo, man, like, listen, we get it, man. And like I've said before, and I've said this on Twitter before, I honestly believe it's a bit of a land grab. I believe that they're using this as the catalyst. You know, this Khalif Browder, not this Khalif Browder, I'm sorry. He was a person, right? Like they're using this.
But they're capitalizing on him. Yeah.
Yes.
Publicity
yes.
And everything around this is speeding up the process of getting people to talk about and hopefully close Rikers for whatever the plan is.
Yes. That's the issue. So yes, you can have your jail in Brooklyn and the Bronx, and there is a jail in Brooklyn, Brooklyn House of Detention, right?
Yeah, and there's a Bronx House of Detention, there's a Queens House of Detention.
So yeah. Where are you putting this? Like, where are you putting it? You tell me what your site is for the New York House of Detention.
Yeah, I want to know where the Manhattan one is gonna be.
Tell me who y'all moving out of Tribeca.
Yeah, yeah. Because because the court, exactly, because the courthouse in Manhattan is downtown. So yes. Any thoughts about putting it up in Inwood or something like that is like, nah, B, that's way too far. So you, like you said, you're going to put it downtown by the World Trades and all that stuff where people's paying, you know, $5,000 a month for one bedroom? Really? Oh, come on, man. What are we talking about, man?
So,
it's a really interesting, dynamic here. So we're going to keep an eye on how this thing develops. It'll be a year over years, but it's going to be very interesting how they keep pushing this agenda forward. Let's have a little fun. Real Housewives of Atlanta had their season finale Sunday night.
Yeah.
We finally got into Chateau Charest.
Chateau Charest. They have a four-part reunion coming up. So that's going to be...
Which apparently is going to be not just the Real Housewives reunion, but the Housewives franchise reunion of all...
Yeah, like
reunion.
Nuts. Like Anthony, Mad Jewels dropped.
What's his name? Andy came out... Andy, and I might have said this on the show last week. Andy came out of the taping and Snapchatted or Instagram lived or something and just kept saying, holy shit. He was like, I've never seen no shit like this before. Like he just was like, yo, this is next level. Damn.
So, yeah, so this week we got into the inside of Chateau Charest. I just have to say, I've said this on Twitter about 15 times. So I'm going to say it again.
Why is the house so big?
I don't understand. Number one, why is the house so big? Because her oldest boy doesn't seem to live there. I mean, I think he's
well. In fairness, when she started the house, in fairness, they all were still
home. But even if the kids was like the house is like monsters for three people. It's because Bob ain't gonna live there, so it's only gonna be three of them regardless. Because the oldest daughter has her whole life. And then so you got the youngest daughter who looks to be about 16 or 17, about the same age as Noelle. Looks like she's probably going to be going to college soon.
I totally forgot Sheree has an older daughter.
She was on the show this week. Yeah, so she has an older daughter who's, I think, married or something. And then, she had a boyfriend or something. I think she's married.
Married.
Yeah, and then she has the two younger ones. The oldest boy's in college. And then the younger daughter is, like I said, looks like she's going to be going to college pretty soon. So I don't, number one. Number two, I still don't understand why she spent all this money and seems to be having all these issues, you know, paying for the shit that she had to pay for to build a house from the ground up in a city that is rampant with short sales and foreclosures of like pretty big homes. I mean, you can get any size home you want, foreclosure short sale in Atlanta.
So I think this for her was about.
This was an emotional
decision.
It's the symbolism more than anything else. Like buying quote unquote somebody else's house wouldn't have done it for her. You know what I mean? Like I think it was after even more bullshit that we can infer that she went through with Bob than the bullshit we already knew about. You know what I mean?
The dress on the reunion, by the way.
Yeah. So it's like. And Bob's beard looking super shiny.
Yeah, I thought it was right. I thought it was
just soul glow on that shit.
Got some coconut oil in the back.
Yeah, yeah. It looks like Bob might cut a little weight too. He looks slimmer on the
a little
on
something, right?
Yeah.
But anyway, and also that beard may not. But anyway, let me shut up. But anyway,
that's your beard, Bob.
Right. Like, let me pull. Do we need to pull that? But anyway, I think it was symbolic. I think just buying a home and moving into a home wasn't going to do it for her. Like, she needed to build that home herself, and she needed to put it together herself to feel like which all of this also, you know, we don't know a lot of about Charest before her marriage to Bob. It's really made me more curious about her. Backstory. We don't have her. We don't have a backstory.
All I know is that she's.
We don't know anything about how she grew up. We really don't see that much of her and her mom at all, even though her mom's in Atlanta.
I think her mom's probably only been on the show, I know, definitely not 10 times, probably less than five.
But her mom's like there, I think.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I'm very curious now to know more about Charest because I feel like there's more back there that led to her being married to a man like Bob and then led to whatever it is that she needs to go through this whole journey, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I would just say to people, man, like some of the things that we do financially, we tend to wrap our emotions in them. You know, like we may have a business and we may hold on to that business a year or two, too long because, you know, our pride and, you know, we don't want to sell, or we, you know, extend ourselves into homes that are, you know, taking us to the brink of debt. You know what I mean? Like serious debt. Like, that's a real thing, man. Like, when you're making, when you have such a huge financial exposure, it shouldn't be based, it shouldn't be based in an emotional decision.
Right. You because, because like, where is Sheree even gonna, where is Sheree even gonna get, I mean, I don't know what her Bravo check is, but she's probably the least paid of all the girls. So I'm, because she just came back. So I'm just like, where, how are you even getting the income to keep this up?
Yeah, so I'm saying, like, just the heating and cooling of that home has got to be phenomenal. Like, the ceilings are like, the ceilings look like they're like 35, 40 feet
high.
Yeah,
they're cathedral ceilings.
I'm like, yo, your air conditioning bill in the summer, and, you know, Atlanta, you got to have it because it's boiling. Oh my God, it's going to be astronaut. And then the groundskeeping and the, I'm like, why? Why?
And also too, and we've spoken about this before, not to beat a dead horse, but like when you have a 10,000 square foot home, you are in, to some degree, you are in perpetual renovations and redos.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like there's constantly things to be done, because by the time she finishes the basement or, you know, all of the other things that are there, it might be, you know, an issue with the gutter on the left side, or you know what I'm saying? Like, it's just over time, a house needs care continually and constantly, especially a house of that magnitude, because it can go downhill really fast. Like,
real
fast. A year with, like, skimping on, you know, upgrades and maintenance can really take the value of your property down. And again, this is usually, your home is like your biggest financial exposure, so you have got to protect that asset at, you know, as much as you can.
Yeah, so God bless her if the central unit, the central air unit go out or something like that. Good Lord. Seriously, that's gonna, first of all, it's gonna be hot or freezing, and it's gonna be dumb expensive. Like, it feels like she's gonna be always like one step away, and that house was shit going way left. But we also saw the return of Kim Zolciak and Croy,
who are coming back next season. So I guess Tardy for the Party,
and her show's coming on in a couple weeks. No. This show
coming.
Yeah, it's coming on like next week or 2 weeks. It's coming on. Yeah, so
Shout out to Kim, because she owed her whole entire life to fucking Real Housewives of Atlanta, the whole damn thing.
She met her husband on there, everything.
Yep, all of it.
Good Lord. So, I mean, besides that, I got to mention one other thing about it. Like, and I've said this on Twitter too, like 100 times, but I really don't, I know that he's not an innocent nigga. Like, so I can't just say he's this innocent, nice, sweet man. But like,
Matt?
I'm talking about Peter. The way Cynthia always is like, kind of like bothering Peter.
Oh my God, like, let that man process. Let him move the fuck on. Jesus
Can I get
Christ.
A hug? And how you doing? You doing okay? It's like, yo, like,
our divorce was just final. I'm not cussing you out. I'm not ignoring you, but like, God damn.
And I got I didn't want the divorce.
Yeah.
this is what I was saying before. Like, She seems to not be comfortable with feeling like the bad
person. Like she's a bad person,
yes. And so she's really not even doing this to necessarily comfort Peter. This is more
just
about
to save her own guilt. Yeah.
Yeah, she's trying to buy, you know, I use the term trying to buy back a piece of the soul, right? Like, she's doing this in an effort to feel better, so she doesn't have it hanging over her that, you know, she did something wrong. And I mean, you know, they're grown, and you know, she didn't want to be married. I mean, it's really no other way around that. He seems to have come to terms with this situation, and he seems to have come to terms with the, listen, this is not the first time Peter has broken up with someone. And I mean, obviously breaking up in a divorce is different, but this is not the first time Peter has been in a relationship with someone, broken up with them, and seen them in several places.
Right. And not only that, like, I think Cynthia forgot who fuck she married, and I know that.
But he gonna be all right.
I brought this up about Peter before because a lot of folks don't really know who Peter is. Peter used to date Nia fucking Long. Yeah. Like he's gonna be fine. Yeah. he's gonna be absolutely fine.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, on the clip of the reunions, he says, "You know, I'm dating somebody that I like a whole lot."
Yeah,
yeah. And then Cynthia rolls her eyes like, "Oh, it's like why are you rolling your eyes? You let the nigga free, but." We'll see what happens on the reunion when that comes up. So real quick, wanted to talk some real quick music. Cause Nye says I'm the music person. So
nigga, you are the music person. I don't know. I made that up. I think listeners age after me, nigga, the A&R. Okay.
You made that up. So next week I'll give you all the review of the Kendrick Lamar album. It drops on Thursday night. It's called Damn. The artwork and stuff has been out. You got the song out now. Called Humble, which I really like a lot, actually. I think the shit is hard. And we'll see what the album presents. I'm sure it's going to be about 48 think pieces by 6 a.m. Friday morning.
Oh, absolutely. Plus, it's Easter Sunday. You know niggas going to find all kind of resurrection connection, all kind of Good Friday.
Yeah, because a lot of niggas ain't got to go to work on Friday. A lot of niggas ain't working this week.
Oh, my God.
Because it's spring break.
It's spring break, yeah.
Yeah, so a lot of people took off for the kids. So you got a lot of time to listen and, like you said, trying to find the hidden meanings in the songs. And then the surprise album right now for me was this new Joey Badass album.
Joey Badass, yeah.
That was great. Like I, full disclosure, I was not a fan, like at all. Like I was like, I don't get to see what you niggas are getting this dude. I don't like this old retread 90s shit. Like I didn't like his stuff at all. But this new album is like, it's like really, really good.
Can we pause and talk about how apparently you hate like anything retro or nostalgic or I didn't really realize that until a conversation we had
last week.
Like you only want the hot new latest current whatever.
I have all the records in my iTunes in my head. You know what I'm saying? And I can take y'all all the way back now. I can take y'all all the way back. We can talk about James and Sly, Marvin. We can go back way far. So I can go deep there. But I feel like once I kind of really sponged an era, then I want to move on to the next era. I don't want to ever get stuck. And I feel like especially as an A&R person, I feel like that was one of the downfalls of New York rap and New York music executives is that the 90s was such a fun era, and it was a lot of money flowing, the women were gorgeous, the parties were like so over the top, fantastic, everything was over the top, like everything was like niggas were ordering Mr. Childs in the studio.
Yeah, the 90s, every music video you see, and that was the era where life really looked like the music video.
Yeah, yeah.
Like and the very, very early 2000s.
Puffy Parties was literally like the video. You know what I'm saying?
Literally.
So it was, I lived it. I was there and I had a great time and, in all those places. But I feel like once that shift happened, so many people got stuck because they were like, wait. I wanted to go back to what it used to be, and they kept waiting for it to come back and waiting for it to come back. And it's nothing ever comes back. Things keep moving forward.
But even as a fan, I get it as an executive. I get it as an A&R executive.
Yeah, I love Biggie. I love the Wu-Tang. I worked on a lot of those records. Like when I hear the Tribe records or Keith Murray or whatever, I'm like, oh shit, yeah, I worked on that. That was dope. I get giddy, but I don't dwell. I don't like to dwell on that when it comes to music and stuff like that. I don't like to dwell. I mean, that'd be kin to guys who work down on Wall Street now still talking about the 80s, how the 80s was with Wall Street with Gordon Gekko types and all that stuff. It's like, yeah, now it's hedge funds and now it's tech stocks and you can't.
Right.
Talking about Ivan Boesky and them and how they used to get it popping. Like they did. They definitely did. And The Wolf of Wall Street was a dope movie and everybody enjoyed it. But like, you gotta keep moving forward. And I think that in a lot of cases, like executives from my generation stopped moving forward and they also stopped, paying attention to the youth. And I don't mean just the youth musically, but like young executives, young everything. They was just like, fuck y'all. And they got caught out there because then the youth always gets their turn And if you don't usher them and help them out, they push you out. And then you're like, damn.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of my philosophy. So it's not that I'm not a fan, because like you said, nah, I lived it just like you did, and Sean too. Like, we all lived it. But I just don't. I'm good. I did it. What was it, dude? Still talk about that shit? I'm good.
Yes, nigga. It was a great era.
Yeah, but it's 20 years ago.
I know. I'm fucking with you.
No,
but it was really surprising.
I know you fuck with me, but a lot of niggas say that and they're not fucking with me. They're serious.
But it was surprising to me that you were dead ass like, yo, I'm not. I don't even know why this motherfucker's playing music. You know what I mean? Like, it was just kind of like, sometimes you just want to hear scary. The fuck.
Yeah. What was that scenario?
Somebody was playing old music in the office.
Oh yeah. I don't want to mention who, but like there was some music being played somewhere, and I was kind of like, "Why are you?" And it was playing like remixes, and like I'm like, "What? Come on, man!" But you know, God bless. I guess I'm a little different. You know, I guess I'm a little different. Did you watch Real Housewives 9?
I did. I mean, aside from Cynthia pushing up on Peter, let me just say, I meant
Love and Hip Hop.
Love and Hip Hop. Well, I was gonna say, going back to Real Housewives for 1 second, I'm so excited to see Phaedra get exposed on the fucking reunion. I'm gonna have some popcorn. I'm gonna have some food. I'm gonna have some drinks, cause she irks the shit out of me with her fucking hoity-toity, holier-than-thou, judgy ass, throwing rocks, hot in hands ass, and I'm so ready for her to get blown up.
Yeah, she.
Like, I'm so ready. Wait, Sean, I'm going mute. I think Sean thinks he's on mute.
Sean opening doors. We doing the drive-in, bro?
My bad, man.
I think he thought he was on mute. Oh, okay. Yeah, Love and Hip Hop. So, Peace to Monami Entertainment.
Yes.
This season's hard, and I was excited for Atlanta to come back. And it's like I'm watching two different shows. The Kirk, Jock, Stevie, Jock, the storylines that involve the older cast members, mm-hmm. I'm kind of cool with. These new motherfuckers, Lovely Mimi and Sierra and Shuda and Mariah, like it feels. First of all, I'm just not invested in them at all. Like, I could give a hot damn. But also, it jumped to drama before I even knew these people. And I don't even like these people. Like, they're not like none of them are likable. They're all loud.
The Asian girl is very unlikable to me.
Yeah, like, I just don't. They're loud. They're silly. The Mariah girl is like 6 years old and she acts it.
Yeah.
Shooter, I can barely understand things he says. He's unintelligible. Like,
he's got a weave too. Shooter's got a weave.
He got a weave. The Sierra girl talking about I'm dripped in 15,000. Ma'am,
And then the Mariah
like,
girl.
And everything she says is a saying. She's like, what's up, it's your girl. And I'm too player for this. And I'm too, it's just like, just talk English. Just speak English, please. Like, I just, you know, take some straight out sense. I'm a boss ass bitch. You own a brow salon.
Interesting how Jocelyn this season anyway up to now has become likable.
Cause she's pregnant.
Yeah, so
she's feeling maternal.
Yeah, she can't really turn up because obviously she's with child. Right. So she's kind of like the mother hen now.
She's trying to squash it.
Yeah,
and she's doing a good job.
Yeah,
thus far.
She's doing a great job actually.
I'm noticing that Mimi ain't really around.
Yeah, Mimi ain't been around since about episode 2 or 3. I know Brooke can't talk about
that. She ain't really around.
Yeah, Brooke can't say nothing about that. Yeah, but she disappeared.
Maybe I guess she ain't got no storyline.
Maybe it was contractual.
Or she ain't got no storyline.
Yeah, and contractual.
Also no storyline.
because she, what's the call? I guess her storyline was just that she became a lesbian, but that's not really that interesting.
Yeah, she ain't fucking nobody. Like her storyline is always either about Stevie. Or, it's always about a Stevie and whatever new relationship she has. Yeah. I guess about that. It's just.
Yeah. So I don't know. Did you watch? Black Ink was.
Black Ink is tonight, isn't it? Tomorrow.
Black Ink.
No, it's tomorrow. Yeah, it's tomorrow.
Black Ink. Yes, Wednesday. So.
But yes, let's talk about Black Ink for a second because we didn't tape last week.
Oh,
and
yes.
Right. So, wow. I can't, I don't even know where to start with these people. Like, seriously, I don't understand anything about how any of their minds works. I don't, Caesar just reopened 113th Street. These motherfuckers can barely get it together. He talking about he want to open
another spot.
One in another state.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he fucking everything moving all of a sudden.
Kitty girl. I mean, she seemed cool to me. I mean,
I just don't understand her purpose. I don't even know where she came from. Like, all of a sudden, she was just on the show. I was like, I don't know who this is, but okay.
Yeah.
Brand ambassador.
Also, too, man, like, you know, if you're a boss, you own a business, if you have assets, like, just, you know, don't fuck the receptionist.
That's true.
I mean, like, it's just probably not a good idea.
It's not going to end well.
It never ends well.
Well, also, too, man, it exactly what happens at that dinner is exactly what happens.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
She's
not being respected. She's never going to be respected now by any of them.
Yeah. They're going to make jokes and talk shit.
It's just not. Yeah. It's just. And listen, man, I'm going to say this. And, you know, I've kind of changed, man. Like, Sky is not a good person.
At all.
She's just not a good person.
At all.
This isn't about having an emotional meltdown here and there. Like, bringing Shorty to the dinner, you know, blowing
just
it up.
Just to start shit. Yeah.
Blowing it up that they went on a date, you know, talking wild, reckless, the lie. Yo, it's.
Every
so
time
much.
She walk in somewhere, she's so loud, B.
It's
so
much.
Loud. She's so rude. And the fact that if you even say anything, the fact that every time somebody says something to Sky about Sky disrespecting somebody else, she takes it as being disrespectful to her.
Yeah.
Like, if you tell Sky, look, you can't talk crazy to this person, she flipping. Literally, that's what happened. Like, Caesar was like, you're not going to talk crazy to her. And Sky literally is flipping tables and throwing things and walking out because she was told not to talk crazy to somebody else. Like, that's all it was. Like, you know what I mean? That girl ain't even come to Sky no type of way. Sky just been coming at her. Yeah.
But that's the other thing, too. It's like the girl, Tiffany, who came in there. Like, I still don't exactly
which one
know.
Is Tiffany?
That was the girl that Sky kept fighting. She wasn't really on the show. It was like every time that girl was on camera, like, that bitch breathing. I'm a fuck her up.
Yeah, she was like, all my kids. I'm not going to rest till I fuck you up. You know, it's like, come on. It's so crazy.
It's a lot.
Okay, so then my other thing is, all right. So maybe there's something with Oshit's girl, wife, whatever.
Yeah, you're going to say what I was going to say.
What I don't understand is why these people think anybody is scheming to be with Oshit.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think that they think that they're scheming to be with Oshit. I think that Oshit fell into her pattern. You know what I'm saying? Like,
no, they've been digging up dirt on her, Googling her, coming to Oshit. Like, yo, we're trying to protect you. We're trying to look out for you. She's scheming. She's a fraud. But, like, you scheming to be... For what? To be with Oshit? For what? Like, what are you trying to get off of Oshit?
I think, listen, as a friend, I think that when you see your boy emotionally wrapped up into somebody so fast, you do have a sense of protective mode, right? Like, let me put my finger on this. It's just like you with your girl. Like, if one of your girlfriends popped up with some new nigga and was just like, yo, I met him 3 months ago, we finna get married.
True, like, that's valid. That's
like, you like, hold up now, like, not
who's this dude?
Yeah, like, who are you, my nigga? Yeah. Like, literally and figuratively, who are you? And the fact that she doesn't really come clean to anyone at any point. Like, if you notice, there's a part where she said, where Caesar says, "Do you have any other kids?" Right?
And she just doesn't answer.
No. She answers. She says, that's my only son.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's little shit like that that she does. And then she comes in and, you know, old girl, somebody just pops up and was like, yeah, she has another kid. And immediately from the door, she goes and fighting. Now, that's usually a sign.
Yeah, because she knows this girl's telling us secrets.
Yes, that's the shut the fuck up sign.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's you letting too many cats out the bag sign.
Yeah. But it was wild because Oshit threw water on that girl, too. It was like,
well, because he's an emotional, he's a junkie. He's an emotional junkie, distressed, he's whatever. Like, that's junkie shit. Like, that's what a crackhead would do, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, you jumped on my old lady, you know, I'm gonna throw my beer on you. You know, it's crackhead shit. So, but what they're saying is that she has a pattern and they're pointing out her pattern, which is she, you know, gets with these guys, she has kids,
and abandoned,
seemingly bounces.
Yeah, leaving you with the kid.
You know, basically, and so basically, it's fuck nigga behavior by a woman.
Except in a woman.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
But so, I mean, for me, granted, oh shit, stability is on the line as a recovery addict, but it also, to me, would be a little bit of poetic justice. This nigga acting like this is his first baby in life. Like, you got a bunch of these motherfuckers floating around. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he's like, we about to have a baby. Nigga, you already got several. Like, what are you talking about? You know what I mean? It's like...
Yeah, this is the thing with this guy. It's like, there is a point where it's kind of like, yo, my man, like, you know, it's the blind leading the blind. I mean, the biggest influences in his life is Caesar and Teddy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I mean, this is what we're talking about here. There's no 45
year old Walt is like the voice of reason.
Yeah, but, you know, and that's the thing. You know, Walt is not he's not one of those guys that's going to continually repeat himself.
Yeah.
Like, I told you what to do.
It's on you.
Yeah, like, dude, like, I'm not going to just keep. I got my own, like, Walt got his own kids to worry about, his own life to worry about, and Young Bay, because he definitely trying to push up on Young Bay.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, we're gonna tomorrow night see what it look like. I want to mention two more things before we close. One, we're not to go deep on this, but your man Trump last week shot 59 Tomahawk missiles into Syria. Apparently, didn't do much damage of anything. He bombed an air, allegedly bombed an airfield to stop planes from dropping barrel bombs and chemical weapons on Syrian civilians.
Let me tell you what, now I'm really clear that that was about, like, we all knew it was kind of posturing when it happened, right? It was just him trying to look presidential or whatever, but Trump is closing in on his first 100 days as president.
Mm-hmm.
And his administration has accomplished zero.
Outside of Gorsuch,
right. They are trying desperately. There was a meeting, right, a couple of days before the Syria thing happened, where they were really like, how do we not make this first 100 days look like a failure?
Mm-hmm.
So his team is trying desperately to create a narrative to show some strength and success. And be able to create a narrative and a tone for this first 100 days. And I think this was part of it. And
the
bar is so low that him doing something that legitimately is not, you know, a bunch of us were appalled by it, because even if taking action against Syria may have been right to do, we know that he didn't come to the decisions for the right reasons. And we know he has no plan. Right.
No plan.
So, I mean, but the bar is so low that literally there's a bunch of motherfuckers that's like, anytime Trump speaks a coherent sentence and takes an action that has some precedent rather than just doing some crazy shit, oh, he became president today. Like, we got to stop that bullshit.
But what's happening is definitely backlashing on him, because people are realizing now what you just said, that it was all for show. He didn't destroy the – they're flying planes out of the runway that they allegedly bombed.
They were the very next day.
24 hours
They were the next
later.
Day.
Yeah.
24 hours later. So that says to me, you know, you basically dropped $200 million worth of missiles and you couldn't destroy a runway in what most would consider a third world country.
Exactly.
So what are we doing here?
It was all for show. It was bullshit. People definitely came out, like you said, and this year was like, oh, he's presidential, but here comes the backlash rumbling again, coupled with, you know, there's more and more Russian shit popping up. And, your man Spicer today wilded out at the press conference saying that,
Hitler never used chemical warfare.
Meanwhile, he called the camps, the concentration camps,
he called them Holocaust centers. Or something like that.
So, like, like, he, They can't get out their way. And then your man Trump played golf all weekend. Like, it was sweet. Like,
well, they actually showed that in the 81 days he has been on the job, 17 of those days have been on the golf course.
Yeah, he's chilling.
He's basically chilling. Basically Trump is working 3 and 4 day weeks.
Yep. Every Thursday, like he's Thursday, out of there. Yeah.
Like Thursday, 4:45.
Gas up the jet.
The office. Yeah, yep. Gas it up. Let's go. And yep. We out here.
So he's ridiculous. I just wanted to mention that. So the Syria thing, like you said, nah, there's no plan. And, you know, who knows what the backlash is going to be. And now he's on Twitter today talking reckless about North Korea. Like, so, like, you know, this dude is, he's bananas, man. Like, he's ridiculous. Like, he's silly. The last thing I wanted to talk about was the United Airlines situation. So there's a doctor named David Dow who lives in outside of Louisville, Kentucky. And he was on a plane from from Chicago to Louisville, which is like an hour flight. So apparently, United had overbooked their airline, the flight for that.
Actually, now the story is that it wasn't even overbooked.
Okay.
I didn't know that. Just about getting some staff.
Yeah.
So, on the flight.
Yeah. So there were four United staff that needed to get to Louisville, I guess, for something that they needed to do. I think they were flying somewhere to Louisville. So they tried to get four people to take the vouchers to get off the plane and all that. Nobody wanted to do that. I think that was coupled with people just wanted to go. And who knows how much of this ripple happened.
Based
on all the drama from last week in airport.
What they were offering was, you know, a lot of times when flights do ask for volunteers, it can literally be like just the next flight, a later flight, whatever. They were offering a flight. They were saying they were going to put them on a flight 3 o'clock the next day. That's a little bit more than just take a later flight.
Plus, this plane had already been delayed 2 hours. So people were already agitated. Like, nah, I'm not getting off. I've been waiting I'm going to go home. So when no one budged, they said they would pick people randomly, which I've never heard of before. So they picked one couple. The couple, you know, begrudgingly got off the plane. Then they picked another, because David Dow, people are not really mentioning this, but he was with his wife.
Right.
So they picked another couple, David Dow and his wife. David Dow was like, nah, I'm not doing it. Fuck you. I'll do some other shit. They called the airport police on the plane. Who like dragged this dude off the plane, banged his head on an armrest. Of course, it's filmed from 400 angles. Everybody on the plane is filming it. People are horrified. It's horrible. Then somehow David Dow gets back on the plane.
Right.
Totally distraught and, you know,
dazed, spacey.
Catatonic. Talking to himself, like, I gotta go home. I wanna go.
And then he's just like, just kill me.
Just kill me. Like, you know, so who knows who's having flag. I think he's originally from Vietnam. So who knows?
That's what I said. I said it sounded to me like he felt like maybe he was getting deported or something. Like some post-traumatic something.
Yeah, so who knows what kind of flashbacks he might have been having. The wild shit about these clips, though, is, who's to say what I would have done? But, like, the white folks on the plane are literally just chilling.
Well, but also, Jeff, like, standing up to a federal aviation, I mean, stand up to an aviation officer, they're a federal agent. Like, that means you're also getting the fuck off the plane. So, I mean, with that in mind, I can't say that I'm standing up for motherfuckers either. Like, airline staff are federal agents. That's what you kind of have to keep in mind. So, and those law enforcement officers, they're not just like even your regular police, they're federal agents. Okay. So, it's more than just standing up for human rights. Like, you might get kicked off the plane. You might end up on a no-fly list. You don't know what the fuck they're going to do. You know what I mean? You could end up in the airport. You really just don't know.
Motherfucker might end up in Lewisburg doing the 18.
You're doing a strip.
Yeah.
So, you know, needless to say, the situation was crazy.
And United did them. So the other thing that's important to note is that this is the second incident with United in like 3 weeks.
2 weeks ago, they had the thing about the leggings.
Right. Mm-hmm. And in both instances, what made it so bad is that United initial statements were very whatever.
Yeah.
In this case,
there was three statements before they kind of apologized.
Right. In the first statement, the CEO didn't even address him being dragged off the flight. He was just like, we're working to reaccommodate the passengers. And it's like, this ain't about reaccommodation, motherfucker. This is about how he got taken off the flight. And, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, because he's Asian, because he's just, that motherfucker could have been blue. The way he was taken off that plane, white man, black man, Asian man, whatever, he could have been, he could have had on a Make America Great Again hat, and I still would have been like, that was fucked up.
Yeah. Real talk. And then, of course, they tried to start a smear campaign because
against him. What does his past,
like, they knew who he was,
possibly have to do with, like, they didn't come get him off the plane for disrupting.
Yeah.
They got him off the plane because, like, the man bought a ticket. Like, the first mistake, United, is letting everybody board the plane and sit the fuck down. Because I don't know how you think you're going to get, like, don't let them get on the plane in the first place. Because first of all, the boarding process is mad hectic. It's annoying. You got to wait, got to put your bag in over here, you got to do all that shit. Like, by the time I'm in my seat, you want me to get up out of my seat?
Yeah. Remember, get up out your seat to get on another plane, and your bags are on that plane.
Yeah, I gotta get on another plane tomorrow just because y'all randomly want some United staff to fly?
Yeah.
Yeah, what you think, bro?
I think that there's several things here. One, I think that this, and like I said before, I think leadership is something that is top down. And I think that this, again, shows very piss poor leadership in positions of authority with United. The apology from the CEO indicates to me that it's a very, we get to do what the fuck we want sort of vibe there.
Well, apparently it's a really fucked up, not fucked up culture over there, but it's very much not about customer service. It's just numbers.
And here's the reality about flying. We don't live, air travel is so common now. Nobody is, this whole idea of boycotting or all of that shit, that just sounds great, right? The reality is that people fly for time. That's what you do. You fly because of the convenience, and they know this. Mm-hmm. They know that you're not taking fucking Amtrak 12 hours. They know that you're not,
That Greyhound bus with the,
you ain't taking with, that with mega the, bus.
The chicken.
And chicken. They know that, right? And so they, first thing I think they need to do is they should have, and the CEO should have said, we definitely need to review our policies. And the fact that it took him like two or three statements to even suggest that is crazy to me. But also too, like, I just feel like policy is one thing. And then there is a rule, and then there is a spirit of a rule. Right. And then there is, how do you handle this? Like you said, Nah, the fact that if you knew that this crew was coming, you knew you needed four seats. Don't even board the fucking plane.
Yeah.
Right.
Get your crew in there and work your way backward. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Because that's what's crazy to me, because absolutely this is not a thing if this happens at the gate versus on the plane.
It's not a thing at all. And it still might have taken you a minute to get. So you still might have had to forcibly bump some people, but it's a totally different situation if it happens at the gate it happening in, like, you having to physically pull someone out of their seat.
Mm-hmm. And I think that this is, you know, again, doing security, I'm not comparing myself to a federal agent or police officer. You have got to learn how to deal and manage and talk with people, right? And what happened was, this was a pissing contest. This was a customer saying, I'm not getting up out of my seat. And this was an officer saying, oh, yes, the fuck you are.
Yep.
And instead of going to any one of the full flight, like there's 100 people on the plane, you could have went to anybody else to say, hey, guys, is there anybody else willing to do this? Apparently, you could have, done a little, little bit of embarrassment, put them on the spot. There's a bunch of different ways, but this is what happens when you don't have leadership, when you don't have meetings, when you don't have, talking about scenarios and how to handle them.
Well, here's the other thing, is that there is a passenger bill of rights for airline passengers, right? And overbooking and getting bumped from flights and delays has been an issue that the airline industry as a whole has been trying to focus on for the past year. And United seems to be one of the only ones that can't get it together. I was reading in an article about this, that this year has had the lowest overall passengers bumped from planes in like the past 20 years. So it's something that airlines are cognizant of and trying to focus on. But as a passenger, you now have a bill of rights because the airlines were starting to become so haphazard with our shit. And as a ticketed passenger, you can't tell me, and maybe I need to do some research, but you can't tell me that the needs of your crew to fly supersede me having paid for a ticket in my seat. Not like that. You know what I mean? Like, I'm sure that ain't in the fucking fine print.
Well, it apparently it is. And the thinking is like, if we don't get this, there's a domino effect. Like, there's a massive domino effect, right? So if this crew doesn't get on this plane, who knows what the next steps are, right? Like, who knows, you know, if they don't get on this flight, that another flight is delayed, and then that return flight is delayed, and then that other crew can't get to the other plane, right? So I understand that there's a domino effect, right? But again, this is about having people who use better judgment. Yeah. And no one seemed to use judgment here. No one.
It was just like, whatever.
It was just, it's that's what I'm saying. Like, over since 9/11, there has been so much given in terms of power, in terms of how they are able to just discretionarily, you know, dictate, you know, what is sort of basic, a basic customer premise. I paid for something. I'm here to receive this service.
Yeah, like, that's like, whatever. Not, yeah, they're like, whatever, nigga.
dude wasn't flying on the buddy pass.
Yeah.
Dude wasn't, you know what I'm saying? And it's like, it's just crazy to me. I think that you have so many aggregators, you have so many different sites, you have so many different people, and they bank on the fact that, you know, people will miss their planes and things of that nature. And yeah. I definitely feel like they need to revamp, you know.
They do. Both the hotel and the airline industry do this overbooking thing. And yeah. I actually showed up at the W in LA one night, very late at night, on one of the few nights that they were overbooked and everybody showed up. And they were referring late check-ins to another hotel. And like, all these people were like Starwood's priority people, because those are usually people who travel frequently, they get in late, they do whatever. And I mean, like, the poor manager on duty was so mortified about the fact that he, like, they had to send like four people to another hotel because they were overbooked. And these are like Starwood, you know, like Starwood's
platinum member.
Yeah, like that type shit. Yeah.
Yeah. So I know I saw that but you know, the hotel industry is obviously getting eaten up. I mean, they'll be, you know, they're not going away tomorrow, but Airbnb is definitely putting a dent in them. And then I saw that, somebody, I forget which news network I was watching. I think it was, MSNBC. Yeah, it was Willie Geist. He said that because he's friendly with the guy who started Airbnb, and that guy told him airlines are next. So they're coming up with some type of thing to where they can cut into the airlines. I don't know what they.
Well, there's already a version of there's already a share program for private jets that you can hail, like Uber.
It's called Smart Jet.
Smart Jet.
I actually have the app. I mean, that's really for that's really for well-heeled people. You're not really going to just, you know, drop the kind of
People who going down on like Memorial Day weekend to Miami, you ain't not taking that.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. If you fly in Southwest, I don't think you.
Yeah. Jet Blue. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, the other thing I was going to say is, apparently, United's, lost $255 million today, in the stock market. Against their cap. I mean, their cap is a, you know, multi-billion dollar cap. Right. It's not like they're going out of business, but
this is a very, very expensive in
a day is a lot of money.
But this is a very expensive.
Yeah, just based on people looking at this and the market kind of panicking because of what's happening. So, you know,
they're also shook right now too, because, you know, obviously, I believe this guy was Chinese. So you have, you know, a huge portion of people who fly, and you know, this is not, you know, United is a global company. This is not just about being in the States. Right. So, you know, how does that affect them on that?
Well, also, United is a company like out of the airline mergers, we now have three, I guess you would call them majors. We have American, we have Delta, we have United. And cause I think it's like United and Continental.
They merged.
Yeah. So, but out of those three mergers, the United merger so far has been the least successful. Mm. And you know, they're taking with them already fighting for market share, you know, this hits them hard, and yeah, they really are going to have a, do a whole image revamp, because now their customers don't have faith in them valuing the customer.
Yeah,
this is the second incident that's basically been based on we don't give a fuck about the people who travel with us.
Yeah, whatever. And the CEO, like I said, so he did the third statement, basically said that, like, hey, you know, this is what it is. Like, y'all niggas will be all right. So,
yeah. Now, but he apologized today after that valuation drop.
Of course, yeah,
he did that.
$255 million in a day. You know, you get some calls from the stockholder. Yeah. Like, what's good?
Yeah. The board is calling.
Yeah, absolutely. So, what you gonna do to fix this? So, that's it. We're gonna wrap it up for this week. And when next week, I guess next week, hopefully, we'll be back in studio. And yeah, that's it. We'll see y'all next week.
All right, peace.
Later.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @Pop Life Podcast. Talk to you next week.